Is my response to God all that it should be? And I know the answer for that is always, when you really look at it, you always say, no, there's always more that I could do. There's always more of a relationship that I can have with God. So as we think about this, and it's not just during this class, but as we leave the class today, what I want us to start doing, what I'm going to try to start doing in my own life, is to apply these things to me first. And not always be so quick to say, well, I go to church more than such and such, or, well, they're not even involved in, or, well, this, you know. I want to say, am I being all that I can be? And I know that, you know, again, the answer is always going to be no, because I can always be more. When we talk about being lukewarm, what adjectives or what ideas come to your mind when you think about that? I know he expressed some in his little talk here, but what things come to your mind?
Sitting out too long.
Okay.
Stagnant.
All right. Stagnant, that's a good word. What else?
Going along with stagnant, not growing.
Okay. Lack of growth. What else?
Well, when you think of, like, when one of the things, and I know this goes a little over and a little grosser.
I'd expect that from you.
Thank you. But especially when I look down at this, I think I don't drink coffee. I never have. Never will. It's just not something that I have ever done. But every now and then I'll take hot chocolate in the morning. You know, nothing puts you to sleep faster than a nice hot chocolate in the morning. But I'll take it to school and something like that. But because I don't drink coffee and I don't take it every day, I'll finish it up or drink what I want and then leave the rest on my desk. And then a couple of days later, I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I'll open it up. And not only would I imagine that it's lukewarm, I've never quite tasted, it also has nastiness growing out of it. You know, it's not just the fact that it's changed in temperature. All the evil, bad, grotesque things are growing on it. And if you leave it there long enough, we've had to throw them out. Because it is, no longer are you able to remove it. It's become part of the cup. And so, as he was talking about that, I was thinking of that a little bit too. Not only does your flavor become lukewarm and does it stagnate, but it's also growing things that you don't want.
Okay. That's a great point. Anybody ever been to a pond that has no movement? What does it look like?
Swampy.
It has this green gunk on the top. I remember, and I know Blake remembers this full well. Years ago at Rivergate, we were on a mission trip, and we'd ride around the bus, and we'd let the kids out in different neighborhoods, and then we would kind of keep our eyes on them and drive around or whatever. Well, we decided one day that as we were driving around, we were going to get some super soakers, some of those big water guns. We were going to fill those water guns up, and then we were going to, as we went by, we were going to go out the church, the window of the bus, and we were going to shoot the kids as we went by. Well, so we stopped, and this was his idea, I think. We stopped, and where we filled the water up was in this lake, was in this pond that was just, it had green goo on the top. And he went down and he filled up every water gun with that green goo. Well, as we're shooting it, you know, the kids are like, ah, ooh. You know, it's really funny until you got this stuff. And it's you know, it just has that, I mean, it's hard to even describe what kind of smell that is. But anytime something gets left out, that food as well, anytime anything just gets left out of the fridge or gets, it just becomes stagnant. And I think the word that comes to my mind when I think about this is the word undesirable. Undesirable. I don't think anybody wants a lukewarm cup of coffee. I don't think anybody enjoys drinking that. Or you come in from you've been mowing the yard outside and you come in and you're just parched. And you get you a lukewarm glass of water. So there's a few people that like lukewarm water. But for the most part, you know, you want it to be cold or you want it to be hot. But nobody likes anything that's just lukewarm, that's just stagnant, that's just there, that without any movement at all. And that's anytime anything stands or sits in the same place for very long, that's exactly the way it's going to become. And that's exactly the way our lives are. And that's exactly the way our Christian lives can become. We've talked about several weeks ago about sometimes we get ourselves into a rut when it comes to our spiritual things. Sometimes I wonder, and I've wondered that this week, do we set the bar for what we should be, for what our response to God should be, too low? Let's say I'm getting ready to, to go on a workout regimen. Well, I ain't worked out in a long time, obviously. And so I'm setting my workout regimen, or I'm training for a half marathon, or whatever it is. And so I go out and I say, well, today I'm going to run 14 steps.
I like this one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, am I going to be able to make it 14 steps? I hope so, right? But I think and really what I should be doing is doing what? Today I'm going to run 5 miles. If I don't make it, oh well. I'm going to do the very best I can to reach the level that I can. But instead I set my bar so low that I know I'm going to accomplish it, and then I feel good about myself. Dude, I'm 14 steps today. Woo! Well, everybody looks at you like, what are you talking about? 14 steps is nothing. Or I'm gonna do some push-ups today. I'm going to do 12. Well, probably the guard, actually. Four. I better set it kind of low. Four. Surely I can do 4 push-ups. But we're always, you know, instead of setting the bar here and saying, I'm going to try with all my might to get there and to strive to respond to God as He deserves to be responded to, I'm going to set the bar down here so that I can just feel good about myself. Think about how we set our standards in our church, in our churches. What are our standards in church as far as those people that are faithful Christians?
They're here 3 times a week.
Okay, anytime the doors are open, I'm there. Okay, if we have extra devotionals and stuff, I'm there. Anytime we have something, I'm going to be there. What else? We follow the right doctrinal mantras, right? I don't know if mantra, I don't know what the word is. It's came to mind. We follow the right ways of doing things. And again, I'm not discounting church attendance. I'm not discounting doing things in the right way as far as worship and that sort of thing goes. But I've known people, and I'm afraid that I have been a person that has sat in quote-unquote acceptable worship services, and my worship has been no more acceptable than anything else because my heart wasn't there. I've come in and I wanted to do the very bare minimum that I have to do in order to respond to God for all that He's done for me. So we have this picture of what a faithful Christian is. And then we compare that to what the Bible says about the things that we should be doing as Christians. I think about, talks about reaching out to the lost. And I'm going to step on your toes and my toes. I'm just going to mention this, just for the idea of it. It's not necessarily to harp on this one thing. Would you say that God, in our relationship with Him, God would want us to bring others to Him? How many in the past year, how many people have you brought to Christ? Even worse, how many people have we even attempted to bring to Christ? I'm talking about you personally. As a group, every time these doors open, we have kids coming through these doors. That's exactly what we're trying to do. That's exactly what we're all about. The adults upstairs. I mean, when we're as a group, that's what we're doing. But what about you individually? God holds us to so much of a higher standard. And He goes through, and we're not going to go through all these because it's pretty lengthy. But He profiles the idea of what he believes is a lukewarm person. And he goes through several statements, and he has some verses to kind of go along with it. But the question for us is, are we really
lukewarm. Because if we are, if you are, and I am, we're undesirable to God. We're undesirable. It's a pretty stark verse in Revelation when he says, I will do what? Spew you. Some versions say, I will vomit you out of my mouth. That's not the place I want to be in my relationship with God, is that he is so repulsed by me that he wants to just spew me out of his mouth. Just get rid of me. He can't have anything to do with me because of that. And again, not because I'm a bad person, not because I'm out there doing all sorts of bad stuff, not because I'm, you know, I never go to church. We do all those things. I don't think there's a single person in here that isn't trying to live their life in the right way. But is that all there is to it? We spent the last 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, I think it's 4 weeks maybe, talking about God and painting a picture of who God is. And we've talked about how awesome he is and his greatness. And what then is our response? And Chris talked last week and the week before, talked about that what God wants for us, the reason we were created was to praise him, was to be servants of his. And if we're not fulfilling that mission, then we're not being who we're made to be. The question is, for me personally, how do I take the next step? How do I realize I need to do more? I need to be more. Think about all the statements that Jesus makes in the book of Matthew, especially. He says, you have heard that it was said. Remember those statements? What are some of the things he says? You have heard that it was said. What?
Eye for an eye.
Okay? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Okay? And the you have heard that it was said was that everybody's going to be okay with that. Right? That's just the acceptable standard. Somebody punches me, I'm going to punch them back. What I was always taught, right? So, except that they're bigger than you. Then you run. That kind of hit home with you there. Okay. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, what does he say? Yeah. Turn no cheek. You've heard that it was said. What does he say? Do not commit adultery. But I say to you, don't even look to lust in your heart. You've heard that it was said. What does he say about love? Remember that verse? Let me scroll on the top of my head here.
Love your neighbor and hate your enemy.
Okay. Love your neighbor if you hate your enemy. Well, of course, right? That's pretty basic. But I say, even love your enemy. And go further than just love your neighbor. Love your neighbor what? As yourself. You see, Jesus' standard for the things that he wants from us is higher than the standard that we set for ourselves. We set our standard here, and Jesus said, no, the bar is here. And it's not that it's some sort of a thing where we're always trying to jump over the bar, where we're trying to, you know, we're not like trained puppies trying to train ourselves to jump over the bar. But it's, Jesus says, you can't settle for life here. That is not acceptable to me. Another challenging verse is, he talks about being a disciple. And he says, if you want to be a disciple of mine, what do you have to do? He says, first of all, you have to lay down your own life. But he says, you have to even hate. And then the word hate there is not talking about that you smack them around. He says, hate your own family. And basically what he's talking about is that you put them as a lower priority. You see, the thing is, am I really doing that stuff? It's all good to talk about. It's all great talk. But am I actually doing anything about it? One of the things that he mentions in the book, two passages I want to bring up for us to kind of discuss. The first one is Matthew chapter 13, verse 44. Matthew 13:44. says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. And then in his joy went and sold all that he had and bought the field. You know, I wonder, what was it about the field that was valuable? See, he found the treasure. It seems kind of odd, doesn't it? Chris is walking. He's walking outside today, and he stumbles upon, whoa, what is that? And he uncovers some hidden treasure back in the backyard. We don't want to know what that treasure is. But he uncovers some hidden valuables that somebody dug back there 45, 60, 50 years ago. Chris takes it, and he looks around, makes sure Jerry's not watching. And he goes and he hides it somewhere else. And then he goes and he takes his own money and buys the field. And leaves the treasure there. This doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. What seems to make sense is, you find something valuable, what are you going to do with it? When you use it to buy the field. But see, it wasn't the field that was valuable. It was what? It was the treasure that was in the field. Is that the type of attitude that we have about our relationship with God? That it is so valuable to me, it is the thing in my life that sustains me, that keeps me going, that I look for, that I strive for. Because there's a big, huge field out here, right? This world is like the field. An interesting thing that he brings up is he talks about parables. Why Jesus spoke in parables. Somebody tell me why Jesus told stories in parables. I know it's the old earthly story with the heavenly meaning, right? We said that about many times. So I'm going to talk class in parables every week. What is a parable? It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Kids, I don't know what that means. So why did he speak in parables?
Tell me these cats.
You have to explain that.
Yeah, well, basically, it's makes you think about it, and the more you think about it, eventually you'll figure it out. Like, it's not something you just usually grasp right off.
Okay, all right, hold that thought. All right, I've always kind of thought, and I guess I've thought about it a lot of different ways. But think about parables. You think, well, all Jesus is trying to do is make a comparison so people can understand. So he uses farmers, and he uses, you know, all the different things, and brides, and he uses all the different things that everybody relates to. Is that really, and so people, it would make it more clear what he was trying to say. Is that really why Jesus spoke in parables? Basically what he was doing, he was taking the value thing, and he was digging, putting it in the ground. And in order to find out what that is, what do I have to do? To dig for it. Not everybody understood it. Jesus would tell a parable and everybody, I mean, it's just, you know, the Bobby look. I mean, it's just, Bobby, it is kind of, you know, everyone's looking at him. Talking about. It's a cool story about a farmer, but I have no clue what he's talking about. And then Jesus would get his little band of guys over here, and they're all like, that was a great story, Jesus. What did that mean? And these were the guys that were walked around with him. Well, let me explain it to you. And Jesus would explain it. Oh, yeah. And they would get it. And everybody else is still walking around in the day. He's like, what is he talking about? But there were those few that would dig and would try to figure out exactly what he was talking about. So Jesus tells this story, and he talks about it being a field, and he talks about this treasure, whatever. Jesus wants more than just the service level for us. God is searching for those people who really want to dig in our lives, dig for him, and try to find out really what he wants. Not just the service, not just coming to church and doing the very basic things that we see as being a Christian. He wants us to dig for what's there. The other verse is, and we've talked about this before. I'm sure many times you've studied the idea of the parable of the soils. We had four different kinds of soils, right? Somebody tell me which kind of soils we had. Don't do the good one. Don't do the best one first.
Rocky.
Okay, tell me about the rocky soil.
It's really shallow. Doesn't have good roots.
Okay. It
springs up real fast.
All right. That's one. Second.
Thorny.
All right, tell me about that one.
It takes root, but then it gets crowded by other things.
Okay.
Pulling neutrons, whatever.
It's the third one. I think there's four, right? Mm-hmm. The other one is right. Is the path. Is that right? Where you plant seeds and there's nothing to plant. I mean, it just sits on the top. Doesn't penetrate at all. The heart is so hard, or the ground is so hard, that doesn't the seed doesn't go in. And then the fourth type. That's a good one you say.
The fertile soil.
Thank you. Fertile. Very good word. Fertile soil. The one that has been tended and whatever. Now, here's the question. And he brings this point up in the book. He says, which type of soil are you? Of course, that's always the question. He says, but most Christians always assume that they're the good soil. They always assume that that's who we are, and we're the best, and it's those other people out there that are all those other kinds of soils. He makes a comparison between, he says, what's really the difference between the thorny and the good soil? What's the difference between the two?
Let other things get in the way and crowd it out.
How's the soil? The
soil's the same. The
soil's fine.
Otherwise the weeds wouldn't grow.
Right? The soil is fine. The soil, the good soil and the thorny soil, they're the same type of soil. When something's planted, it's going to grow. It says that whatever the good stuff is going to grow. It's almost too fertile. Because what happens? All kinds of other stuff comes up too. But what's the difference between the two? Anybody ever had a garden? I know Miss Nadine's had a garden before. You had a garden before? A long time ago? Anybody got a garden now? They don't do that kind of stuff anymore, do they? What?
He doesn't
laugh. No, it doesn't laugh. Me either. I have like a red thumb or something. Anybody have a yard? Okay. There we go. Okay. Anybody ever spent some time out landscaping your yard? Mm-hmm. Anybody? Me either. One time several years ago, actually, it's at mom and dad's house where you guys live. We went in there. It was a horrible landscape. Mom had always hated it, and so she said, "This year we're gonna take it all out. We're gonna hire some professionals to come in here, take it all out. We're gonna replant all new stuff." So that's what we did. Man, and for like a few months, it looked great. But then what happened?
Weeds started coming.
They had promised us weeds were not going to come up. They supposedly put some stuff down that wasn't going to happen. That never works, does it? Weeds are going to come up no matter what you do. So what do I have to do?
We don't pull weeds.
Why don't we pull weeds? Well, that's true, but why don't we weed?
It's not a whole lot of fun.
It's not fun! The thing about weeding is, and they come up with all these different devices. They have this one that you put in and you spin it. You ever seen that one?
Mm-hmm.
That thing does not work. I've tried that. It gets everything but the weed. You go in and you spin it, and you're like, well, it went all the good dirt. This weed's still there. Or the weeds, sometimes they'll attach themselves to the plants, right? Vines and all kinds of stuff. It is just not a fun process. Especially if you let them stay for a while. They'll take over. So the difference between the good soil and the thorny soil is that the good soil remains cultivated. Somebody is actually taking their time to keep the bad stuff out, to try to keep picking the stuff out that does not belong. I'm afraid, and I'm not talking for you, I'm talking for me. I'm afraid this is where I am. Really good soil, my heart, I desire to follow God. I desire to be His child and to do the things that He wants me to do. I desire to go to heaven more than anything. So I think. But I allow so many worldly things to creep into my life that aren't bad. They're not bad stuff. I think Christmas ended a few weeks ago. They're not bad. Sports. Work. Work's pretty, pretty vital, right? And you can just name all these sorts of things that just come in. And if I were to look at my life as a garden, what would it look like? I'd like to be able to see that picture, to just, like an x-ray machine or something, some kind of machine, and you look at Chris, and what you see is his garden. The garden of his life, you see, what does it look like?
Don't look too close.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Yeah.
What do you see? I'm afraid, for me, it's all this other stuff. And the thing about weeding is, it's a constant process, isn't it? If I don't keep up with it, then it's an hour a week. What happens if I don't keep up with it? It just takes it over. Sometimes to the point of where, I don't like those weeds. They're green. It's kind of pretty. It's got a little flower on it. I mean, that's not bad. I don't want to pick them. Plus, they got thorns on them. That hurts. We get used to the weeds, and we just allow them to just stay. The question he asks in the book is, for you in your life, what are those weeds? What are those thorns that are choking out your spiritual life? Not necessarily choking it out, but we're talking about being lukewarm, not allowing them to grow. See, that's the thing about it. If you allow weeds and thorns to come in, your plants will not be able to flourish, right? They won't be able to be what they were intended to be. People, they'll pull up to the curb and they're like, wow, man, that's some nice weeds. Instead of seeing the beauty of what God intends in those different plants or whatever it is that we planted. So what is it in your life, and what is it in my life that is choking out my relationship with God? That's not allowing me to grow. Because the thing is, once you cut those things loose, what happens automatically? Because it is good soil. It's going to grow. We're going to grow. But I'm afraid what we've done is that one of those things that's keeping us down is that we've only set our bar this high. Well, I've made it there. Wow. You know, I'm putting on cruise control for the rest of my life. I'm where I need to be. When in reality, I know it's not true. Maybe it's just me, but do you ever convince yourself of things that you know not to be true, and you convince yourself that they are true? Yeah, I know you've been listening to that side. I do that all the time. When I get by myself and I start thinking about it, hey Mike, start contemplating it, I know it's not true. But I convince myself that it is. I'm doing all I can do for God. I'm doing all I can do for Christ. My relationship with Him is awesome. I was thinking about this, about our relationship with God. Many of our relationships with God is like someone that we work with. Anybody work with people that you really like at work? I know there's people you don't like to, but that's not focused on that. Go to work and you walk in and you're like, hey, Bubba, how's it going? Hey, pretty good. How you doing? How's it? And Predators, boy, they really blew it. You know, you just talk sports and, boy, that's nice weather we're having and blah, blah, blah. And then that's it. You sit down with one of your coworkers and you're like, man, I need to tell you about a problem I'm having. I'm struggling with this particular sin. Like, can I talk to you for a minute? How's that conversation going? Whoa, look at the time. You see that our relationship with most of the people we work with is what? It's just a service level relationship. We go to a certain level with them, and that's as far as we're going to go. There are a handful maybe of work coworkers that I take a little bit further step. But I'm afraid that's kind of where we are with God. That as we come to church, and as we study His Word, as we sit in Bible classes, as we do other types of things of service for God, That we keep it just right here. And I never go beyond that. And that's not the type of relationship that God wants with us. And that's not the appropriate response to the love that He has given us and the love that He has for us. He wants us to give it to Him in return. I was talking last night to someone about a friend that has been married to a person for a very long time, for a pretty long time. And they're splitting up. And what he has discovered is, in his kind of in the aftermath of the things that are going on, what he's discovered is that his love level for her was here. And her love level for him was here. And he hadn't noticed it, or maybe he had just kind of fooled himself into thinking that everything was hunky dory. But how's that relationship end up working out? Somebody tell me.
Well, they're splitting up.
Well, in that situation, it didn't work out too well. God's love level for us is here. Where's mine for Him? Is it here? And there's a total disconnect. If I'm not striving to match the type of love that God has for me, which I know I can never reach, but I'm not striving to do what I know beyond just the ordinary and average things. You think about, you know, we come in our marriage relationships, sometimes we fall into this trap. We come in and we have our little routine, we go in and we get home and we, you know, hey, how's it going? And we sit down and we watch our favorite show and then we do this and we do that. And I'm afraid that may be where I am with God. God wants a little more. He wants a lot more. He wants me to say, you know what, I'm willing to be more than just here. And I'll be honest with you, and we're going to talk about some things a little bit later for the study as to what are some ways that I can go beyond where I am. But the first thing I have to realize is, and admit, is that maybe I'm exactly who he was talking about when he said, people that were lukewarm. Maybe he was talking about me. I don't want to be that person. And I know you don't. I don't want to be the person that God despises, that has disgusted him, because I'm not willing to take more or give more than just a surface. And that's kind of where I'm going to leave it this week. Chris is going to be teaching next week, and I'm sure he'll do a fantastic job of clearing up all my mistakes.
Right, Dave. One thing when you were talking, especially there towards the end, when you were talking, kind of bridging the gap between the soil and everything. Weeds don't take work. Flowers do, which is why all of ours are dead. You know,
right.
You have to take care of them. And one thing that really hit me as you were talking is, I remember our first year that we had our house, and we left to go to New York for 5 or 6 weeks, however many weeks we went during the summer. We had somebody coming in to mow our lawn for us and everything like that. But one thing that we didn't have them do was work on our fire pit. Because we were like, it's a fire pit. Fires burn there. Why do we need it? You know, we pulled back into our house 6 weeks later. And I really understood the stories of my dad talking to me about Vietnam. I looked, I mean, weed stalks that were 7 feet tall. And when you got down to the base of them, they were like, that.
Like trees.
You know.
We couldn't hack them down. They were that thick.
You know, I was taking an axe and everything to them, and they were winning. Wow. I was like, holy cow. You know? And there was just, it had taken, you couldn't have paid me to walk in the center of that. You know, because Mr. Snake had probably taken over. It was just this horrible, and what we ended up having to do is take, no telling, well, our neighbor who used to be, who knows what kind of stuff it was. It probably will kill us later. But he sprayed it on it, and he said, I promise this is going to take care of it. The first day we look at it, we walk outside, nothing. Like, oh yeah, you thought you were. The second day we walk outside, nothing to me, and Terry goes, well, they're starting to turn colors. And I'm like, okay, I'll take your word for it. And then finally we went out, and they had fallen over. And, you know, we could take care of it from there. But knowing us, we took care of what was there. School started back. 3 weeks later, I walk out there and look.
They're already starting.
And they already started growing again. You know, we thought it was the worst possible environment for anything to grow. But that's the point. You have to have the good environment to have the good fruit. It doesn't matter what environment you have. And evil is always going to try to get it. And if you let it get too big, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, you feel like you just want to give up.
Well, and I was thinking, I completely agree with the sports and the work, but we're getting back into that box analogy where there's God here, and then there's sports, mm-hmm. and there's work. And, you know, it's not like there's meant to be in competition. I don't think it's meant to get rid of those things as much as to change and make those things all about God. I mean, you can be a great example to the fellow parents. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, he was going back, and I do agree that we need to weed out. I spent 8 hours doing a puzzle yesterday, and I spent any time studying my Bible, which is what I needed to do. But we need to be careful that we're not compartmentalizing again.
Yeah, that's
we can't ever get to a point that we think we can act one way here and act differently than with the people that know I'm.
Well, the thing is, even though, even if we talk about the idea of being a good example everywhere that we are, okay, that is true. But at some point, I do so much stuff outside of my relationship with God. I don't have any time to do the things that actually cultivate my life. Because we talked about, and we didn't even get into, what is it that cultivates that soil that gets rid of the bad stuff? Well, it's doing stuff that offsets that, right? It's making sure that I try to keep those things out. But you keep some stuff filled in to the spot that's left with stuff that we know that builds our spiritual lives. And, you know, Bible study and whatever, talking to other people about Christ. You know, I think we're always expected to be a good example anywhere we are and talk about Christ. But I mean, really, truthfully, how many of us go to the ballpark? And maybe some do. Go to the ballpark, but or watch video games and, you know, or play video games or do whatever and say, you know, well, I'm thinking about Jesus while I'm playing this. You know what I'm saying? There are certain behaviors that, even though they're not bad, and we can make them positive, we still, I think, and I'm talking about me, we crowd so much stuff in to my life that God is not recognized, I guess is the point. It's not that I don't do things for God, but it's that God is not seen in my life by those. If my garden is looked at, well, I see some flowers in there, but, you know, they're kind of hidden.
Well, I agree, but I'm just saying you need to change the perspective as a whole. I think we need to get much bigger than just weeding out. Because in my experience, you take those things out, you're going to fill them up to something else. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Your hobbies are always going to change. We need a complete transformation. Get rid of this. It needs to be my whole life.
Just like
with warm drinks, the longer they're away from the stove, the faster they cool off. You know, I mean, they'll eventually get cool, no matter how close they're sitting to the stove. If they're not sitting on the stove, if they're not brought back to the stove often enough, they are going to turn lukewarm. And I think, like you're saying, you know, if you're constantly doing all these things, they're great, and you can be a good example, but if you're not continuously bringing yourself back to the fire, then you're not going to...
You need that private time with God.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
there's a
radical perspective
change. Very good camp
knowledge. Just for you.
I mean, in my business, I know exactly what it takes to heat something up or cool it off. In both cases, it requires work to be put into it. And if you remember the verse, Jesus said, I would rather you be cold or hot. Because he knew at that point, you are at least putting effort into either of those. Because nothing is hot unless we heat it up. Nothing will be cold unless we put it someplace where we refrigerate it. We're running electrical power. We're doing something to make it cold. If we totally ignore it, it goes to a steady state. We call it room temperature. It's like everything else around it. It takes no effort to do it.
Right.
It has given off all its heat. And it's become just sitting there. Because we're putting no effort into it. There's no work involved.
Look,
Real quick thing. Yeah. I think that the relationship, I missed most of the first part, so I don't know exactly where we're at. But the relationship with God thing when I came in, where you were talking on the analogy of the family, the couple, the love levels are different. I think that's exactly how I feel in my relationship with God. I know my love level for Him is so different than His love level for me. I think we should, in our world today, the thing I battle with the most, and I think I see a lot of people battling with in Christianity, is that we're conditioned to discount that we can have that kind of, we can have a love relationship with our God. To me, that's what it's all about. I've learned that I can. I do. And that fires me up. It sends chills down my body right this moment just saying it. Because I know it exists. You know what I'm saying? I know that it,
right.
That's the way you feel when you really love somebody in a couple relationship, having been in a few myself. When the love is there, that's the way you feel when you talk about your spouse. That's the way you feel about you talk about that person that you love like that. Just mentioning their name or trying to describe it to somebody, you feel it right inside your body. You know? When you feel, anyway, I think we discount the time of love relationship with God.
Yeah, I think that's, and we talked about
it. We fill our lives up with all this other stuff, and I like what you're saying about bringing ourselves back to the fire to get rejuvenated, but I think then we fall, I think then we fall into a trap of hauling ourselves back up into a church service or something to get somebody to say, you can do this, go live for God, and we get pumped up, bring it, then we associate that with the fire, and we go back out and usually fall flat on our face and just go right back to a mundane lifestyle, and the fire just is left.
Right.
It's just hard to carry that out over and over and over again, because that fire is the same fire. We just hear that, go, you can win, God's your... I don't think that's enough. I don't think that's a relationship. It's got to take that time one-on-one,
right.
You got to find a way to talk to God, to be with God, to read His Word, like she was saying, instead of playing the puzzle or whatever, you know, we fill our time with it.
Yeah. I had a radical thought, just to kind of end with. I remember Rich at one point hired me and Becky to come and redo his landscaping. And I don't mean to cut Rich down or anything, but it was a mess. He hadn't done anything in years too, and I don't think I do. I don't really remember. But that's been 4 or 5 years ago. Basically what we had to end up doing was just taking everything out, right? And just retilling the whole thing. I wonder, and this is what we have to do at Mom and Dad's. If you don't do that, what happens? There's always the remnants of the stuff that's left. What I think sometimes we may be in need, and maybe that's what this class is about, is retelling our hearts. Saying, what is it in my heart? What is in my life that is holding me back from being what I need to be? What have I set the level at in my life that what I need to do is just start over? It doesn't mean, you know, get rebaptized and start your new Christian life new. It just means take a look at what I'm doing. Take a look at the way that I am. And say, and it's kind of like Sarah said, get a fresh start and redo the whole garden and start from scratch. The problem is that is not easy to admit that there's stuff in there that doesn't need to be. But some of it's trees that have been there forever and that you have to really chop them down with an axe. And they'll continue to grow back. So that's a little radical thought for you to think about. Is, you know, maybe we just need to take a tiller to our, you know, just at least use an electric tiller. I mean, a gas tiller or something. You know, don't try to do it all by hand with a shovel. I mean, it's not enough. All right. Hello. Hey.
Hello.
Hey. Hey. Okay.